Wake up with the news and information you can trust. Starting your day the right way with the Andy Griffin Show. This is News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU.
Oh, good morning to you. 908 on KDXU. I'm Andy Griffin. This is the Andy Griffin Show. Later on in the hour, we'll hear from McCray Hepler. He has two new videos out. One about, you know, he likes to do those videos of what's happening, what's coming up in southern Utah. One is on the Washington Fields Road area. The other one, we'll get an update on Jellystone Park in Sand Hollow and out there with the Walmart and Hurricane. Yeah, looking forward to that. Again, McCray will be on in about 20 minutes or so. Right now, we are fortunate enough to have Joanne Brinton with me on the phone line. Hi, Joanne. How are you?
Hey, good morning. How are you? I'm great.
Good. We were hoping to have you in studio. It looked like it was all going to work out, and then at the last minute, you had to go out of town. But I appreciate you still being willing to be with us and be on the phone today. It's good to talk to you.
Yeah, thank you. I was hoping to be in the studio, but this spur-of-the-moment Title IX event got scheduled at the Capitol today. So I headed up last night, last minute, to be there with Speaker Schultz to welcome these women coaches that are traveling around the country in a bus speaking up for women's sports. So I thought that sounded like a fun event.
Hopefully we can all band together and keep guys out of women's sports. That's,
yeah.
That's the ideal. Joanne is running for state school board against Kristen Norton. And Joanne is the Utah GOP-endorsed convention nominee. In fact, she got 85% of the delegate votes at convention. You know, I've had Jimmy Keston on, and he's a big, big proponent. In fact, he is a delegate for the GOP. And he's a big believer that that should mean something. What does it mean to you, Joanne?
You know, I didn't really understand the caucus system until a few years ago, but I feel like the delegates are really invested, and they vetted the candidates. I spent, you know, 2 months taking phone calls, going to events, talking to delegates, answering their questions, and so it really is humbling and an honor to me that they so overwhelmingly voted for me to support me and could see the need for some change on our state school board. I think actually every state school board member at their county and state conventions lost. So I think parents are saying, hey, we need, you know, not an attack on schools, but let's do a better job focusing on academics and giving teachers what they need and the resources, and getting parents involved in the classrooms and refocus on academics. I think that's the resounding message that I'm hearing from people, that they want to see the bar raised in our schools.
There was for a time, a couple of decades where Utah was, I think, next to last in the country in spending on education. That's been rectified a little bit. But despite all that, our students have done pretty well academically in comparison with a lot of the rest of the country. What do you think is the strength of our educational system right now? We're not throwing money at it as much as some other states, and yet our students are excelling for the most part.
Yeah, I would say, you know, as I've looked and started studying the difference in what they call it weighted pupil units, what different school districts spend, like Salt Lake, for instance, spends twice what Washington County does. But I think we do a better job with our students here, giving them diverse options. We've got our new CTE high school, which is a great facility if you haven't seen that.
Yeah.
And Choices and the Success Academy and having concurrent enrollment. But I think it's the strength of our families in Utah that, you know, families make such a difference. And if you can have parents invested in education, I think every teacher that I've spoken to in different schools around our county, and when parents are involved, when the PTAs are strong, when you've got involvement and there's a team helping those students, they do better. And I think that's a testament to Utah and our families and our values here.
I agree with you 100%. I know that, you know, as I was raising my kids up through the public school system here in the state of Utah, there were times when I was like, oh, I'm tired. I worked all day. I don't want to help my kids with homework, or I don't want to get on their cases about, you know, studying for a test or whatever. But ultimately, I found out what you were just saying, that if the parents can get involved, even just a little bit, just hey, don't you have a big test coming up tomorrow? Do you need some help studying, or do you want a quiet place where you can go? Just little stuff can really make a big difference in a young person's academic experience. So,
yeah, absolutely. When parents find value in education and set that standard at home, I mean, it all starts in the home. And so anything we can do to strengthen, you know, when we have strong families, we see the children do so much better. So.
Joanne, can you tell us a little bit about your background and kind of your history and why you've arrived at where you're at now and running for state school board?
Sure. I grew up in South Texas, which feels kind of akin to the Southern Utah vibe and the values we have in our Southern Utah Dixie.
Okay, I got to stop you there because I grew up in Texas as well. Where did you live?
So I lived in the Rio Grande Valley. I grew up in Brownsville, right?
Okay. I know where Brownsville. I've been to Brownsville many times. We lived in San Marcos and Victoria, so you probably know those towns.
I love that area.
Well. Yeah, mm-hmm. Great area.
I have family in Victoria, and I love that hill country of Texas. It's beautiful.
Yeah. Okay. After Texas, then what?
So after Texas, we moved to Orem, Utah when I was 16. So I finished out my high school in Utah and then went to BYU, and I kind of split. I got married young, had a couple of kids, so I stopped school, and then I got divorced, and I went back to BYU and finished a history teaching degree and was a history teacher for 6 years while I was raising my boys as a single mom. And then I got remarried, had a second family, and we moved to St. George. And I felt so lucky, I guess, and blessed to be on the other side now as a parent, being able to stay home and just volunteer in the classrooms, especially through, I have two boys that are going into seventh and ninth grade this next year. And I'm so grateful for Washington County School District and the elementary education they had. The teachers that were so engaged and enthusiastic, and it was a great foundation that I appreciate here.
We joke around that I went to kindergarten, first and second grade, six times, once for myself, and then with each of my kids, I volunteered one day a week helping him read and stuff. Just a great experience. And I'm a believer in public education, especially in Washington County. There are people, though, that say, you know what, public education is ruining our kids. We need private schools. We need vouchers so that private schools can be paid for. We need, homeschooled children. What would you say to people that give you that kind of idea?
You know, I think there is always going to be a need for public education to be the base, but it doesn't always work for everybody. So when I was up in the Nebo School District with my older boys, who are now grown men, 32 and 28, I've got some grandkids as well. But when I had them in charter schools for a few years, and I taught in a charter school there, actually, American Leadership Academy and Freedom Academy up north, and I helped create the history curriculum at American Leadership Academy. So that was a great education for me, forming that curriculum, and I grew to just love the foundation of our country, our founding fathers, the beginnings of our Constitution, and they're arguing it out and coming up with this divine, like, I feel like divinely inspired Constitution that established our nation and lifted the whole world with the innovations that came from America and our freedom. But I don't think it fits. So for a little while, I had my children in a private school up north and then some charter. And I know people who homeschool their children, but I think it's important to listen to parents, and different children have different needs, and one size doesn't fit all for everybody. So I think our legislature is really working to respond to parents and create choice where there is a need, and there's lots to work out there, but I am for working with parents as the experts in their children's lives to determine what the best course is for them. But always having education funded, that's always going to be a priority for public ed to be funded.
You have picked up a pretty impressive list of endorsements for your candidacy, including Mike Lee and Burgess Owens, among many others. Why do you think all these big, kind of heavy hitters are saying, yeah, we want Joanne on the state school board?
Yeah, they've also endorsed a couple of the other school board candidates throughout the state up north. I think they are, what I'm seeing as I've been studying our state school board, is it used to be appointed, and then it was a nonpartisan board, as most local school boards are. They're nonpartisan. But higher ed and public education has followed a pretty liberal, progressive agenda for a long time. Mm. And I think it's time for some correction and restoring of a focus on academics and principles that have made our nation great and our school system strong through history. And I think the outside forces coming in with federal money and federal strings are bringing in social issues into the school and political ideologies that are not focusing on teaching our children how to think, but what to think, and doing more division, as I'm seeing, and lowering the bar of standards. So I know Mike Lee sits on committees, in our federal government that around workforce and education and looking at results, and Burgess Owens is on education committee in Congress. And then I've got quite a few people in the legislature who are working on education committees in our state. And as I'm watching our state school board, now that it's partisan, we have 2 Democrats and 13 Republicans, but we're still not seeing a conservative pushback to work with the legislature on many issues. The legislature keeps stepping in, responding to parents when it comes to things like critical race theory, which is a university level ideology that should be, talked about and studied and weighed with pros and cons, but not something that teachers are, having in their trainings and teaching to students in lower education that aren't ready for these ideologies. DEI is another one. Equity, the theme of equity and equal outcomes that we're seeing through school, where they're lowering the bar so that nobody fails. That's concerning, I think, to a lot of people who want merit-based achievement and giving children things to aspire to. I think that's what America has always been based on, right? Equal opportunities for those who jump in and want to work hard and do their best. Anybody can succeed here. That's our great story and history.
You already talked about these a little bit and kind of stole my next question, but there are a couple of sets of initials that get people fired up when it comes to education. You mentioned DEI and the other one, CRT, critical race theory and diversity, mm-hmm. equity, and inclusion. Talk about for another minute, if you will, about those. Let's start with critical race theory. Barely passed it. It still is in the curriculum, right?
Well, it's gone through like 4 different votes. The school board has voted, they do their rulings in numbers, but they've had this 328, R277-328. If you want to look that up, you can read that on their website. It's gone through several different things, and the good thing is that they can continually change their rules. But the disappointing thing I have found is that it has taken the legislature forcing it. The state central committee passed a resolution on it, and then the legislature has said, you need to get this out of the school. It has taken that rather, and the school board is a constitutional body that has full authority to act in response to parents. But I see a lot of things just pushed down the line, and like with critical race theory, these are big issues, and it basically says, it's teaching how to, white people are bad. White people are oppressors. We need to pay reparations for the past. It's, of course, revisionist history comes along with that. And I just, why would we teach any child to feel guilty because of the color of their skin?
Yeah.
Shouldn't all children be treated equally, loved equally, colorblind, race blind, sex blind? Like, we just love our students and provide a safe place for them to learn and have academics be the focus in our schools. What makes me really sad too is I never knew who my teachers voted for, or what their political ideologies were, or what they did in their extracurricular activities outside of school. School was just a safe, welcoming place that I remember, as a child. Like, I loved school, loved my teachers. We've got to provide a safe space, and I think get back to Martin Luther King's vision of, everyone's equal, content of character. Don't judge anyone based on the color of their skin or what clothes they're wearing. Just focus on academics. I think most parents just want to trust that they're sending their children to school to be educated and to focus on academics and prepare them to be productive citizens in the world.
How do you feel about DEI? That's the diversity, equity, inclusion. It's almost like, affirmative action revisited.
Yes, that's how I see it. And as I'm watching the results of DEI programs that we see through business now and in schools, I think it divides. It does not unite. And I think we should be focusing in schools on things that unite us, things that bring hope, things that spread, that teach a true history. So DEI teachers are forced to go through all kinds of trainings, and DEI has been one of them. There's a DEI statement still on the state school board website. That was kind of the big buzzword in 2021. Everybody was jumping on these DEI bandwagons because they sound good in theory, but I feel like in reality, it's destructive and dehumanizing. Anything that spreads us into different groups or teaches that one group is racially inferior or superior to another, or it's time to pay back reparations for the and feel guilty because of the sins of our fathers 200 years ago,
yeah.
Or even, I would say, George Washington. Like, we're not going to teach history of George Washington, maybe, because he had slaves. Those are the kind of things that I see coming out of DEI programs, rather than uniting and lifting.
Yeah, I can, just on a personal one, it really bugs me that, I mean, it's like reverse racism. Somebody should be hired because mm-hmm. they're a certain race or a certain color of skin or whatever. And it's like, no, this is America. You should be hired based on your ability to do the job. And that's always kind of bothered me. So,
right. Well, and I would say, and if you don't agree in a lot of these meetings or these programs are being presented, then you're the racist.
Yeah.
No opposing views are presented. It's just one-sided as they present these DEI theories. And I think they weaponize empathy, and that's a real problem. And it's one of our biggest enemies because we have a lot of empathy, especially in Utah. We have this wide Christian base that just loves people, you know, and we want to be kind and we want to be welcoming to everybody. But these programs, I think, subversively hide dangerous, destructive is the better word, destructive ideologies that separate.
Joanne, one of the things you run on, and we talked a little bit about parents and family, you know, parents being involved in their kids' education. One of the things you run on is empowering parents and educators. This is the last question here. What do you mean by that, and how can we do that?
Yeah, thank you for the question. I just think the more, you know, I think we've seen a lot of news stories and videos of school boards where parents are crying out for help and they're being villainized and looked at as destructive because they would dare speak up and ask for help when it's, you know, getting sensitive materials out of schools. Actual books that you can't read excerpts from in a committee hearing because it's too graphic, but these books are in our schools, things like that, where we need to just encourage parents to be partners with their teachers. And, I mean, I know so many teachers who appreciate in the elementary level, especially having parents come in, do reading classes, help with tests, grade papers, make copies. You know, the more that we can help support each other, I think the better. And I think our teachers need more pats on the back and thanks because there's a lot of work. You take your teaching job home with you. And we're seeing a lot of burnout of teachers with the extra trainings.
Yeah.
The social-emotional programs that have come into the school, they sound good, again, with empathy, but it's burdening our teachers. We're trying to make them become therapists rather than just teach the subjects that they're trained in and that they love. And teachers naturally have empathy and are in the classroom. I think for the vast majority of teachers that I know, they go into teaching because they love children and they love their subjects and they just want to teach. So the more that we can support our teachers in the classroom and get more funds to them and unburden them with extra surveys and trainings and that don't, I guess, translate into classroom management. You know, trainings with behavior management and their subjects are great, but when you're adding in all the extras that are distractions, I think it overburdens our teachers and we're seeing a lot of burnout.
Yeah, I know my dad was a school teacher. Being a teacher is not what you do, it's who you are, really. So
it's true.
All right, Joanne Brinton, running for state school board. Tell us about your website and all the key numbers we need to know as we head into this primary election.
Yeah, my website is pretty simple, Brinton.com, Brinton. And I'm happy to answer any questions. Shoot me an email or reach out and I'm excited for this. I'm so humbled by all the people that I've met that just really care. You know, we love our children in Utah and so many people do, and just want to see the bar raised in our education and a focus on academics again and our values.
Very good. Awesome. Thank you, Joanne, for coming on today. It's been great to talk to you.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
9:28 now on KDXU. We'll do a check of weather coming up in just a moment. McCray Hepler, he's got the latest on what's up on Washington Fields Road, also Jellystone Park, and out in West Hurricane. We'll be right back.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk leader.
Hey, welcome back, and thanks for listening today. Joanne Brinton on there. It's funny, she said Brinton.com, B-R-I-N-T-O-N. Also, JoanneBrinton.com with two N's, and Joanne, and either way, we'll get you there. She's got a great website. I think she's going to win big, but you know what? In an effort to be fair, tomorrow we will have Kristen Norton on as well. Actually, it originally had them both scheduled for today, but Kristen could not do today, so she's going to be on Thursday for about 10 or 15 minutes as well. So it's 9:33, and we are blessed to have Mr. McCray Hepler in the house right now. Hi, McCray. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. How about you?
I'm good. I haven't been out to the water park, though. You have.
I went.
So, yeah, how was that?
It's a blast.
Yeah?
They did a great job.
Yeah? Well, somebody said their favorite slide is they called it the toilet bowl slide.
Yeah.
Yeah? Yeah.
Yep. That one's big old fun. Toilet bowl slide, yep. And then they got the two tall, straight down ones that are fun.
Yeah. Did you go down those? Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah?
Yep.
Yeah? And was it scary or fast?
It was fast. It was fun.
Yeah, nice.
Really fun. Took my daughter down. There's another one that's more of like a swirly. Mm-hmm. Thought it was going to be kind of slow, but it was she's fast. Two. And that was the first thing we did, and it kind of scared her a little bit. But then we went down it a second time, and she was totally fine. They have a plan for a fifth one that's like a rapid. It's a, what did he call it? They already have the components like for when they get this actual size. He said it's probably a year or two away before they add it.
Okay.
But it's like a very fast, rapid slide. So you got the slides, and then there's an area for the little kids, a little kid zone with some smaller slides and things. There's a really cool lazy river. They've got a bunch of different food, and it's great. It's a really big property. And then they've got the Wee Bit, which is like a ninja course. That's over another, it's a separate, like a pond, and it's a big inflatable, like, obstacle course.
Wow. Did you do that one? No.
I didn't get to go over to that one, no.
Okay.
I want to do that one. And then they've got some basketball courts, pickleball courts, ping pong, a bunch of different outdoor activities, and along with just, you know, the RV park, which is what it is. And that's one thing that I've tried to help put out there, is because, you know, we talk about people that don't understand, and they put stuff online that they don't understand, and then it just creates issues for people that are trying to do cool things here. Well, the park, it's Jellystone Park, and it's a RV and camping, glamping
for visitors,
resort for visitors. Yeah. And that's what it was built for, but they want to make it a local thing, but they also don't want to overrun the water park by, you know, having it be just completely jam packed with and overrun the locals, right? Or the overrun the visitors that are staying at the resort.
Right.
And so they went back and forth on a few different ideas of how to give locals a day pass, and they ended up settling on an actual day pass. You can buy a season pass as well. But I do like the fact that they don't want it to be overrun. They want it to be a good experience for everybody. And there's a bunch of RV pads. You can camp, you know, you take tents, or they have the cabins. They even have these day pods where you can go as like a local, and maybe for a birthday party, or for, you know, if the parents want to get some work done, if they work remotely or something, and then the kids can go play at the water park. Different type of things there. So, yeah, it's really cool. I think they've done a great job.
So my impression, tell me if I'm wrong on this. My impression was they intended it always to be an RV park and that those were the people that would use the water park. But they got, I think Southern Utah is so hungry for a water park type yeah. experience that they kind of almost got like surprised at how much people wanted, local people wanted to go there. And so now they had to kind of, okay, how can we make this work? Is that kind of how it happened?
I think in a way, and I don't want to speak for Scott, but I think that they knew that there would be demand locally the entire time. I think that it was more so just a really figuring out how do we make this a local experience while also making it an experience for the people that are staying on the property.
Yeah, if I come because, from Boise or whatever and stay here, I don't want it to be too busy.
Right, exactly. And so that's where I think they've just, they, you know, still trying to figure out how to manage that. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think they've done a really good job because it's a price point that I think is super fair, but it's also not a price point where, you know, people go drop off their kids, you know, and just let a, it like this run amok thing where, you know, they want, it's a high quality park. It is. And I think that they'll do a good job of maintaining that to where it's not just this, you know, overrun place because it is something that we've needed here for a very long time, a water park, you know, it's.
Well, you know, I live in Middleton.
Okay,
and
yeah.
And they have tempted so many times. We're going to put a water park. We're going to put slide. It never happened.
And it just never happened. And I haven't heard anything on that one for a few years now.
I think it's dead in the water.
Yeah.
No pun intended, dead in the water. But, I don't know that that's ever going to happen.
Totally. But the other cool thing with that I actually just had barely learned when I went and did my video there was right next to that. A part of the property, right when you turn in, there's the big sign, and right next to the big sign, there's a big dirt pad that's being worked on for the ropes of Southern Utah, and it's a big ropes course.
Really?
That is, from what I've heard, one of the largest ropes courses in the country, and they will have a component of that along with some zip lines. The zip lines are planned to go from there over to the water park and then over to the Wee Bit area.
Wow.
And so it'll kind of encompass that whole area. And then they'll have some indoor gaming, you know, like some golf simulators, some hunting simulators and different things with some food components down the road. So the ropes course is supposed to be done within the next month or two. And then they have a building they're going to build and whatnot. But it's like it's a separate company that's building that, but it's on the property, so it'll just kind of go hand in hand with the resort. And then Scott's got plans for an indoor adventure center as well for Jellystone. So,
wow,
super cool. And then right across the street from that is Utah Prep Academy, which I know you're a big local sports guy.
Oh yeah.
I'm super pumped.
Maybe the number one player in the country. I mean, not maybe. He's going to be playing there.
He is the number one. And they've got, I've learned since then, there's two other kids that are, you know, there's three kids that are on the tryout list for the USA basketball under 18 or under 20 team that will be playing right here in Southern Utah.
Amazing.
So I'm super glad that worked out for that type of school to take over the Diamond Ranch campus.
And that's going to be interesting because they will not fall under and play under the UHSAA. They don't play like in Region 9 or anything like that. They'll be basically playing on more of a national level.
Yeah.
With their sports.
Yeah. So. It's a prep school that where a lot of, you know, a lot of top NBA players, they went to prep schools like Finley Prep in Vegas is a really big one. And so, yeah, it'll be super interesting. I would love to see at least some, like, scrimmages or some – I would love to see, like, a Dixie or a Snow Canyon go up against this team in, like, maybe an unofficial game of some sort and just see –
Make a play in the preseason.
Yeah, especially those, you know, like the Dixie and Snow Canyon teams of the last couple of years. I know they're both are graduating quite a few. I don't know what – you probably know more about the local landscape heading into next basketball season better than I do, but – but it would be interesting to see how they line up.
Do you know if this Utah Prep Academy is going to have football? Because they have a great football facility at the old Diamond.
They do. At one point, it was like they really changed the landscape of football stadiums here because they came in. They were one of the first turf fields, and just the very cool campus. I know that they've announced that they have plans for a girls basketball program and then golf programs, which I think the golf is going to be huge. I think that'll be, I mean, for Utah Tech as a facilitator into Utah Tech and whatnot will be awesome. But football I haven't heard about, but it makes total sense.
Yeah, it does. So. It definitely does. And, yeah, I mean, this development, I don't think a lot of people maybe have even looked into this much. There are going to be some big-time players here.
Yeah.
I think it might help Utah, BYU, Utah State recruiting, too.
Yeah.
If you have these great players, you say, hey, you know what, just 3 hours up the road there. We carry BYU on KDXU, so for me, I'm like, yeah, let's send them up to the Y, you know.
Yeah. Well, I know one of them is definitely heavy. I mean, they've all three of the top kids that I think have been offered by BYU. I think there's a good chance that one of them does end up there.
I can't remember his last name.
I can't remember his last name.
Anyway, he actually did an unofficial visit at BYU, and he said he hopes to use one of his official visits there, too.
So. Nice. Yeah, no, it'll be cool. Between there and then Wasatch Academy up north, I think those two in Utah will help drive. And I think it'll be a good driver for Utah Tech as well, you know, for kids that are there that might not get the top of the top D1 recognition, but that are solid athletes that can come into here as well.
Good thing. So, all right. Anything else happening out there in kind of West Hurricane? I know that Walmart is actually expanding out there.
Yes.
And our demand, our craving now for driving load.
The pickup and delivery here is absolutely insane. My wife's uncle runs the Walmart series, the regional manager out here, and so he says that the demand for online pickup and delivery is huge.
That's wild.
And I've heard that from the cookie places too, and different delivery. They just say it's I don't know if we're just lazy and entitled here.
I think COVID jump-started it, right?
COVID did for sure. Yeah. But it's funny because like I've been told that in other markets, the demand for that just isn't quite what
really?
It is. Like, it's just extra demand here for that. I don't know if it's a Utah thing and there's just big families and you know, you have a bunch of kids and you just don't want to go to the store.
Maybe it's our senior citizen component.
And the senior citizen component could be that too. But yeah, so they're expanding, they're remodeling the whole store, bringing it up to date, and then they're expanding with a separate online pickup area.
And if you watch McCray's video, by the way, McCray Hepler on Facebook, or you can go on YouTube, but you have some great video of them actually building that add-on to Walmart. And I was like, wow, that's pretty big.
Yep. And then there's some retail pads right there that should go under construction here pretty soon for some more retail. I don't know
what exactly.
And then that whole Sand Hollow Road will continue to just develop out there. There's a lot of roads.
A bunch of commercial being out through there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of highway commercial right along the highway as you turn into Sand Hollow. Mm-hmm. And then housing developments, and then Pecan Valley Resort is another one that's going to have a water park here pretty soon.
Really? Pecan Valley Resort.
That's in the video as well. That one will also have a day pass component for locals. And then a lot of housing along that track. You know, and the school district has land out there that potentially there's not confirmation of the next school system yet.
Maybe
but,
Dixie Springs High School, Sand Hollow High School, who knows?
Yep. And so I think that that's one of the areas that definitely has the most room to grow and develop.
Room to grow. So, and some say in 20 years, Hurricane will be almost as big as St. George, perhaps.
It's one of the largest land mass. It's one of the largest in the entire state.
Well, the funny thing is, I learned this. Hurricane has the most geographic land of any town in the state of Utah. Guess who's second? St. George.
It is?
Yeah, because if you think about, you know, Desert Cove, that's St. George. St. George is second.
That's a good point. And I was just talking to friends. I was up north yesterday, and we were talking about how ridiculous Salt Lake Valley is because you drive through like six cities in like 10 minutes.
I know, yeah.
And
my sons both live there.
And anyway, he was just like, why couldn't they have just made bigger areas and not just one, you know? Anyway, so, and we were comparing it to down here. And so that actually makes sense.
Mayor Randall was telling me that for a while, Bloomington tried to do its own.
Yeah.
It was its own city, or it tried it, and it didn't really work out.
Yeah.
So.
Yep, they did.
Yeah. All right. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about Washington Fields Road and what's going on out there. McCray Hepler is my guest.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back, 950 on KDXU. And by the way, congratulations to a friend of yours, McCray, and Mike Jersa, now the director of golf operations for the city of St. George. That's pretty cool, huh?
Oh, yeah, it's amazing. Now, so happy to have him back in town.
How good is Mike, by the way?
I'm
assuming he's really, really good. Went to BYU to play golf.
I mean, two-time individual state champion, yeah. And won it here in when they played it at Sunbrook. We actually all went. It was a blast.
Yeah, I was there.
I remember it. Yeah. And, went on to play at BYU. He's played in the Utah Open the last 2 years, and then he qualified for the Open that he just played in it like a month ago. And, yeah, he's one of the best golfers I've ever seen. Anytime I go with him.
I was going to say, when you go out with Mike, how is that experience?
I'm really looking forward to getting together and just 30 minutes with Mike, and I'm like hitting just butter.
Really?
And it always goes away, but at least for that moment in time, he makes like two or three little tweaks, and he's the most effective coach that I've had with my swing. So
I think if I were to go golfing with him, I'd want to play best ball and just mostly use his shots.
Oh yeah, of course.
Occasionally use one of mine.
Of course. Yeah. So. No, I think it's a great position for him. He'll be really involved with JAG, which he's a great coach. Like I mentioned, he's helped at Utah Tech with Sutterfield, and he helped at Utah Valley, and just really good at teaching, and that's one of the big components of that job is the JAG program, which is really cool. The story itself is just really cool. He was part of the original JAG program.
Yeah.
Went through
golf.
Him, and we have the Dixie Flyer, role of players over the years, especially like when we were growing up. Him and Hammer and the Shones and Stephen Archibald, Matt MacArthur, Aaron Adams, all these guys that came through Dixie, and that was like the original group of JAG. And so for him to move away, he was at the Ledges, moved away, worked at a city course, worked over city courses in Colorado, then went to Heber at the Homestead, and then for him to be able to come back home. It's like a dream come true for him, and I think it's just a home run for the city. You know, he's 35. He's hungry. I think he's going to do a great job.
City right now owns and operates four golf courses: Sunbrook, Southgate, Dixie Red Hills, and St. George Golf Club. So he will be busy too.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So yeah, it'll be fun to have him back in town.
All right, let's talk about Washington Fields Road a little bit. Kind of gets a little bit ignored or forgotten about, it seems like, when we talk about all these different places. You know, we talk about the Boulevard or Sand Hall or maybe, you know, Sunset or whatever. But Washington, stuff's happening out there too, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, historically, there just hasn't been any commercial development in Washington City in general until the last, you know, half decade. There's really been more and more, and especially the last couple of years, there's just a need for services out there, especially in the Fields area. There just hasn't ever been any type of services. So all those people that continue to move out there and build as those residential developments grow out there, they're all having to come in, which creates the bottlenecks and creates the, you know, we have Lynn's now, but before Lynn's, and Lynn's has been a few years now, but before Lynn's and before the Smiths, everybody out in Little Valley, everybody out in Washington Fields came into Harmon's or went over to Walmart over off exit 10.
Or maybe Albertson's. Yeah,
That's what has always created the bottleneck on River Road. So it was nice when they put in the Lens and they put in the Smiths. I'm a really big believer of like neighborhood things where you could maybe even walk to the store, or you can ride your bike to the store, or you don't have to travel more than, a couple, like a minute or two to get to your services. And that's what I feel like the Fields has lacked. And that's what is in the works is a couple different developments that'll have, you know, places to eat, places to shop, and places to really get your everyday needs.
Where are these going to be?
So the one that, there's a couple that are in the works. The first one is, it's a gas station and retail. So it's called Whammer's. It's a Sinclair right on the corner of 2000 South and Washington Fields Road.
Okay.
It's a Whammer's gas station. Then that's got a Baskin Robbins going in it. Ooh. And then there's another place that they're just working through lease negotiations still. But that will be another, that's a smaller one that it's just some retail and a gas station. But even a gas station out there was non-existent.
I can't think of one.
There's not.
No.
Yeah. And so then you go around the bend and you go further south in front of Staley Farm and Red Cliffs Corner will have another gas station. Okay. But then some restaurants, some other shopping. There's hopefully a grocery goes out there at some point, not in Red Cliffs Corner, but around there. There could be something that I think would be super beneficial. And then the Junction is another retail development that could have, you know, some of your salons or office space, some other restaurants and some other of your everyday needs.
Why do you think it's taken so long for that? I mean, the population has been there. I feel like it would have been profitable. Has it been the city council saying, yeah, we don't want it yet, or the residents, or what do you think? you got to be careful. I know.
So the city of Washington has always been a great city.
Mm-hmm.
I think just from what I've gathered, historically, the city wanted it to be a small town farming, you know, not really gung-ho on bringing in commercial development. And so the mindset was always just that. But I think over the years, you realize, especially in today's age with the cost of everything, the cost to run a city, a lot of how a city operates is from tax revenues.
Yeah.
And
sales
so
tax. Yep.
From sales tax. And I think that the need has gotten there because the demand for Washington, like Washington is a very, very coveted, like people want to be in Washington. And so, and that's really upticked over the last, I would say, 10 years, you know, as Crimson came in and as the field is just one of those areas that everyone wants to be in. Green Springs, the Northern, everywhere has really just blown up. So the need for it is there. And then the mindset of, okay, we need some of these things to keep operating the city in this way and to provide for the residents. So I think the leadership has been great. And I think that, it's just a matter of it's a timing thing. As time goes on and the need is there and the growth of the city has just been huge. So
almost demanding at this point that we have that. You got to have this stuff now.
Yeah.
And people can't keep coming into River Road or whatever to get everything they
right.
need. So yeah, it's and by the way, Cress Staley, the mayor of Washington City, will be on this show on Thursday. And
we'll
talk a little bit about that.
Love Cress.
He's always said, look,
he's doing a great job.
We need sales tax. We need that money coming in so we can support our burgeoning city, which
yep.
I think Washington City is like 34,000 right now.
So. Yeah. And it's grown tremendously and they're doing a great job on the businesses there. I mean, it's a lot of good stuff happening in Washington City.
I agree. So. Well, he's McCray Hepler. You can catch all your stuff. What, YouTube channel?
Yep, it's on YouTube. I've got I'm on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn. I also have a mailing, an email list. If you'd like to get on that, you can just go to McCrayHepler.com and subscribe to the mailing email list.
You got your own .com, huh?
Nice. It's basic. Just a landing spot for people to go and subscribe to my email. So
McCrayHepler.com, and you can find him on Facebook. Just search for his name, McCray Hepler, and YouTube channel as well.
Yep,
that's right. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
I appreciate you keeping an eye on things for us. We love it, and we love your monthly appearance. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Andy.
Let's see. Tomorrow, we've got Steve Dunham on, Washington County School District. We also have Kristen Norton on Thursday, as well as Mayor Cress Staley. He's bringing some lawyers with him, no, in a good way. That's coming up on The Andy Griffith Show. Thanks for listening.